The title for today is all about noise reduction within Microsoft Teams, but there are other things to go over. Let's roll the intro and take a look at Daniel.
The following episode was recorded live on YouTube. Check out our website at messagecenter.show for all of our episodes.
The 365 Message Center show, where we help you plan for change, prevent or fix, and stay informed. And that has been our logo ever since we stole it from the three categories in the Message Center and stuck it in our stickers. Daniel will be back next week, hopefully. He's not feeling well. I'll leave him to fill in the details, but hopefully he's not trying to join in from the chat, and he's taking some rest. Because it's all about trying to get better, isn't it? As quickly as possible. Flying solo. There's a bit of news around Teams today. Seems to be one of the busiest product groups, of course. There were some other things interleaved in there, and maybe one or two that I didn't drop in our list that I want to cover. But we'll take a quick look at our first message. And I'm going to string this together with another one too. About increasing the numbers of people that can be part of a team. The first team that we're looking at is just a regular team. This is private or public, I guess. You used to have a limit here of about 10,000 people in a team. I got to admit, I've never been in a team of that size. Probably the closest to that might be one of the MVP teams that they set up for MVP Summit, and they invited all the MVPs, and we tried to run a conference out of that. And that was, I think, an early first experiment at running large conferences out of Microsoft Teams. But up to 25,000. Now that is a significant increase. I know that there needs to be some rules around how you communicate, how you're managing your channels when you get to that kind of size. But I think that looking at that, it's about trying to provide large communities within your organization. So good limit. It's going to be helpful to some orgs that are providing that. And hopefully they will adhere to good practice within the team. The next one, I'd see it related to this. And that is also a increase in team membership. This is for org-wide teams, and the limit is going up from, the increase in org-wide teams from 5,000 to 10,000. So the other one was from 10,000 to 25,000. Org-wide teams are slightly different. These are teams that your global administrators can create. They rightly so, because what happens is everyone in your organization is added to the team. And if you have an organization that was up to 5,000 people, maybe you've turned this on and you've used this as a way of bringing your organization together for conversation. This is increasing to 10,000. And so we're seeing the increase, I believe, again, to try and provide organization-wide communication. Potentially it's an org that's not using something like Yammer, and they're trying to shift away from just using distribution groups or shared mailboxes. But this is good, interesting to see. The interesting thing is there's still that limit of you can only have 5 org-wide teams in your organization. So I find that limit interesting too. Again, I haven't been in a team of that size apart from being that event one that I talked about with MVP Summit. And yeah, a few questions here in the chat room. Interesting for having an org-wide limit of 25. Why does it not match the regular team size? So yeah, I mean, I imagine that, as Steve said there is going to be some challenges there with moderation. I think there's a few additional controls there with an org-wide team, but the main thing there too is that it is about controlling things using your Azure Active Directory. And if you're a member of that Azure Active Directory and you're in the right groups, then you become part of that org-wide team. And there's probably some limits to how you can manage that. So keeping that in mind, those two limits will probably be helpful to some organizations. I think in one space, at least for the regular teams, which have gone from 10,000 to 25,000, this could be quite helpful for some education spaces where maybe you've got a whole program and you're thinking of like tertiary or university education. I think the US call it college education. The increase there could help with managing classes of that size. Org-wide teams are still not available in the EDU space, apparently, and perhaps there's some more challenges around that if it's dealing with Azure Active Directory and your school data sync, where you're able to bring students and teachers through into your Azure Active Directory. But two limits there. Right, now our next message comes in at, and this is, I guess, another double whammy, because while I am showing this message on screen for Play My Emails in Outlook for iOS launching internationally, there is a message a bit further up. I'll just show it on the screen there too. Oh, Daniel's going to kill me. I haven't been reading the message center IDs. The one for iOS is MC224750. And our Android one is MC224720. This has been a ability for at least US people for at least a year. It was released and announced at Ignite 2019, and they've just been running that in the US market. I haven't seen a lot of commentary around how people have been using it or not, but I took a closer look at it this year with Microsoft Ignite and some of the advancements around giving you the ability to listen to your emails being played. And I thought to myself, I really didn't look at the announcement the year before and thought, yeah, so what? I can get my emails read. What else? But Cortana, when she's reading through your emails, and this is available for your mailboxes if they're in Office 365, Outlook.com, or Gmail accounts, all right, so you can have Cortana read your email from any of those accounts. Sadly, not all three. So it's not in the combined inbox that we have within Outlook, the Outlook email app. But you can go through each of your mailboxes and have her read. And okay, she reads through the items within your mailbox, but starts off in quite a logical order, preparing you for your day by saying what has changed. What are the appointments that you've got on? Has anyone cancelled or shuffled that appointment to another time? So do you want to accept it or reject it or send a quick message? She'll let you listen to your emails, and then you can choose to skip, flag, archive, or delete. So four useful actions. You know, that's good. I've listened to that. It's fine. Let's just skip. Flag it means I can get back to it. And of course, you know, you don't want to be trying to craft some lengthy reply to an email while you're listening to Cortana read out your emails. So you can flag it and get back to it later. You can archive or delete it. There is an opportunity to reply quickly, just for quick responses though. I recommend not necessarily trying to find the words. I know I'd struggle with it because sometimes when I'm writing an email, depending on the content, the people I'm writing it to, it could take a while to craft it right. Don't want to get it wrong. So those are a few things that you can do with Play My Emails. And the regions that are now going to have this available, Australia, Canada, India, and the UK. And apart from, it says here, the local accents will be available for those new regions. I'm not sure what else is offered, if there's anything in terms of your location data that's going to play into Play My Emails, but yeah, interesting. We'll see what comes out of that. So that's available for iOS and also for Android launching internationally. Now there are different dates, so the iOS dates are, we'll begin rolling this out early November and expect it completed December. And for Android, rolling out mid-November, expect to be completed mid-December. So slightly interleaving there, just to, I guess, give one a bit of time, or the maybe it's a, certainly it's probably the same team that's trying to maintain the code for this. So if there's any issues, they'll want to try and keep on top of that. Right, so that's about play my emails. And I think, I mean, okay, I'm not going to go and change my region to Australia, even though I'm in New Zealand. Our rivalry's not that deep, but I just, you know, what advantage is there except to have an Australian accent and read out my emails? Maybe I'll do it for an experiment. We'll see. But it does pick, you've got to do that at the phone level. You've got to change your phone to that region. So, you know, that has other effects on other things. Try it if you want. Anyway, into our title message, our headline for this episode. Reducing background noise in Microsoft Teams meetings, MC224751. There we go, we're back in the swing of things and reading out the message ID. This is interesting. I remember when the ability came out, it's using AI to remove background noise from videos, and I think we saw it first of all in Microsoft Stream, and then I guess the same AI has been used in for Microsoft Teams meetings. But the idea is that you have this feature turned on and it will remove your background noise while you're in a meeting. There will be three levels. There'll be auto, there'll be low and high, and then there's off, of course, if you don't want to use it. But the thing that we've seen in demos, how will it work in reality? And this is what I'm interested in. If I am, we've seen it in the demos, it's about eating popcorn or bags of chips, and you're rustling this bag, and it's being picked up while you're in a lunch meeting, I think they said. And I was just laughing about it when I first saw it. Popcorn for lunch. Okay. Some people do, they snack and done, it's good, but it's noisy. So is that the main reason for the feature? What do we get with those three different levels? Let's start with low. Low removes persistent background noise such as air conditioners, computer fans, or music. And you're not hearing it right now because I'm using a different kind of noise suppression with the streaming software that I've got. But the noise suppression, it's going to take out that low hum. So I've got my laptop just below my podcast mic up here. Laptop's about 30 seconds away. If I didn't have that turned on, then you'd probably hear this little whirring background noise. Now, for a Microsoft Teams meeting, maybe that's quite useful, that if you've got it set to low, then it's going to remove any air conditioner that you might have in your office or... you know, I had a little space heater fan here going during the winter, so that could be useful. High removes any noise that isn't speech. That's pretty smart. Listening in and going, well, that's not really a noise at all, that's speech. That crinkling of the popcorn or chips packet is not part of, it's not speech at all, so it's going to remove it. And that's the part I'm interested in, about how successful or how effective that is. I want to do a test, reaching out to any Regarding 365 people who want to join me on this. It'd be interesting to try and just have a mock fun lunch meeting where we bring along our noisiest food, eating implements, you know, like we're having if we did it at evening or night, whatever, someone could join in for breakfast and they've got like a knife and fork and they're screeching away on their plate, and someone else is chewing and eating at the same time. Is the chewing noise going to, you know, when you say, your parents always used to tell you, don't eat with your mouth full. Hang on. Don't speak with your mouth full. You're supposed to eat with your mouth full. Don't eat with your mouth full. That sort of thing. Is that going to remove the background noise and still find the words in between the today on the agenda? Is it going to remove all that? Who knows? But it'd be a fun little experiment. When it's set to auto, that level, The key thing about these levels is that you've got to set them before you use them. So maybe that's at first release. I'd be keen to have that choice made during a call, because sometimes you might get to a point where, oh, okay, someone's coming behind me with a vacuum cleaner. You know, maybe I'm in the office and I'm working late and someone's coming through. Or some of the background noise that just happens. Maybe you're in an area in a cafe or something and it happens. At the moment or at release, you're going to have to make that choice beforehand. That means that if you haven't stuck with the default, which is leaving it on auto, auto is where Teams is going to decide based on the ambient noise what needs to be removed. Wonder how that's going to be worked out. If you want to just leave it on high, maybe that's a good default because you don't have any intention of sharing any background noise or any music or anything, just your voice, then that could be a good default. But point is that you've got to make that choice before you need it, before you make that call, before you join the meeting. So yeah, give that some thought. I think that'd be interesting to see as it comes out. I have seen in a bit of research around this that there were other products that people could, we can put in and use to remove that background noise, whatever we're using, whether it be Teams or Zoom or Skype or anything. And so this has just been built into the product. Cool. All right. Moving along, we have some news around Microsoft Lists. And Microsoft Lists is getting a commenting feature. And this is when you can go in and you can comment on a list item. So that's going to be quite useful. That's MC224822. Useful in the sense that if you're collaborating on a list item that you might want to pass comment. And as a team member who might be maintaining the list and the items, then it's a bit like going into a Word document and passing comment and working on it to maintain the contents of the document. So with Microsoft Lists, you'll be able to go in and pass a comment on a list item. Let's just take a quick look at that. So it's a good example here. If we just open that one up in a new tab and that one, and we'll go to full screen without Daniel. How's that look? All right. So in our example, we've got an inventory, items within an inventory, and you might want to pass comment on, I guess, the availability of the item or, you know, how things have been sold. And you've got that item there, so you can pass that comment. There's a little indication that there's a bubble to say that there are comments for that item. And then if you go to that full screen view, if you go to the item, we've got the content of our list item down one side, and our comments a bit further down the other. Now, yeah, that's good. It means that the comment is with the item, no mistaking it. And wherever you refer to that item, you can link to it, whether it be from Teams, as Stephen suggested in the chat, or you're referring to it from an email, then the comment is there. It stays with the item wherever you're talking about it. How functional is it going to be? Can we mention it within there? Can we have threaded conversations? Not sure, but at least at the launch, we have the ability to add those comments, but only if you have editing rights on the list. So think of the list that's been shared with you, and as a team member, you're responsible with a few others to maintain the list content. Then you can go in and edit those comments, add comments, read comments, of course. The people who can view the list, as you would expect, and in line with editing permissions, if they can only view the list, then they can't add comments to the list. So that puts it, in my mind, in a interesting situation where maybe I do want to have comments about an item from someone who only has view access to the list. I do want to know opinions, thoughts. Maybe they've got some things that they want to share about that item, but I don't necessarily want them to edit the item just to be able to add the comments. not available today in that sense. So that's when you will use things like comments about the item in whatever platform you're using for communication. It could be Teams, it could be Yammer, it could be email, whatever. So that's something to note. The other thing about it is it's not supported in classic lists. Okay, it's a modern list feature. You can't expect to see or have the product group developer a classic view of this to add comments. It's not available for lists in Power Apps. And I guess in line with that same thinking, the lists that are viewable through Microsoft Teams don't support comments. So interesting that you can comment, you've got to go to the list itself within SharePoint or the lists page. And you can see the comments there and you can add to them, but not within the other products that you might be using. Like a lot of these types of features, first release, things will hopefully improve and become more functional around having conversations around list items. The other thing about this before we move on, comments can be disabled at the tenant level for all Microsoft lists, but you won't be able to change that setting at the site level or list level at this stage. So it's either on or off for your whole organization, or you can you'll have to wait till you want to be able to change that setting based on site or list level. Quite useful. Okay, let's have a look at our next message, which is good news for Mac users. This is outgoing screen sharing support for Safari, or in Safari for Microsoft Teams, and that is MC224842. Mac users have been able to use Safari to join meetings, and sometimes we have to do this when we're between different environments. It might be just really convenient to just join that meeting because you're already doing something else in Teams and you might be in a entirely different tenant or environments, and so you just want to join that meeting and do it from your web browser. And up until now within Safari, you have been able to join that meeting and share a window. I think also share a PowerPoint. Yep, you can share a PowerPoint. But you haven't been able to share your whole screen. And that's what this is all about. Being able to go in and as someone collaborating in a team meeting or maybe presenting, that I can choose that option to share the whole screen, and then I can have that convenience of swapping around different windows. And that's really the key thing around sharing your screen. People still tend to get confused when they have those full options in the Windows environment and when they're using the full Microsoft Teams experience, that if you go to share content, that first skinny column will show all the monitors that you have available. And then there's this big chunk which is so enticing because, oh, that's the thing that I want to share, but you're only sharing a window. And so the confusion and frustration comes in where they've shared just the window and then they want to swap over and show something else, and they start talking about something that no one, other people in the meeting can see, and they're like, we can't see it. It's, where is it? So now, and I recommend the choice there, that if you're going to swap around during a presentation or you want to be collaborative and you've already taken everything off your screen that doesn't need to be seen, it's a bit sensitive, then choose the share screen option. And now this is available for Safari. So good to see that for Mac Safari users. Moving along, I think this is one that I was going to finish on, but I do have one or two there that are interesting and have popped up recently too. The manage your first line workers' access to Microsoft Teams on personal devices when off shift, MC224920. Now this comes back to the need to, and I think it's for compliance sake, for labor regulations, as the message says, that sometimes you do need to prevent people from working when they shouldn't be working, so that you don't get anything tricky around there about, oh, you expected me to do this, and I was compelled to go in and have a look at some content and some messages and some files for work, and it was outside of my working hours. So, you know, they might take that to the labor union and have some issues. So this is a feature that allows a organization to put a message when someone is accessing their Microsoft Teams on their personal device outside of their shift hours. So it is going to use the hours that you have put into the shifts part of Teams for first line workers. And it's going to look at that and say, look, are you on shift right now? No? Okay, well, I'm going to pop up this warning and this dialogue, and then it's over to you at this point. If you click and say, yep, I accept that, then that's kind of recorded that you've accepted that to move into the app fully and start to look at content. Now, yeah, I mean, it's a good capability to be able to control that. It's given the choice to people as they're seeing that message and saying, well, I still need to check, or I still want to have a look at some content. Admins can change a few options. First of all, they can enable this in PowerShell, and with a few different commands, they're able to change the default message. Actually, I'll just have a look at some of this in the full docs.com article. All right, so we'll just buzz down here. I haven't come across many first-line worker customers at this point, but cool to see some different statuses that are available for them. So you can see that they're on shift, off shift, or busy. And, you know, within that presence change, I know this is a side comment, but the app controls those three statuses, on shift, off shift, and busy. And the user can change, if they're on shift, they can change themselves to busy as well. So those three basic statuses. But here's our off shift access to Teams. So you've got a standard message that you can go with and tell people, yeah, you can't access this right now. By accepting this, then, you know, you're saying that you agree or you understand that you're not going to be paid for going into this during that period. There's an interesting part about this where there's a grace period. I read it for a little while to understand. The grace period, as I understand it, is that it will allow plus or minus a period of minutes for you to go in before or after your shift. So if you think about your shift maybe starts at 8:30, 9 o'clock, that you might go in 10 or 15 minutes early. Maybe that grace period allows you to go in and maybe you're checking a few messages before you start your shift. So that's over to the organization and an agreement, I guess, with employment contracts and the like, that you you have that grace period. At least it's still recorded that if you have clicked in and said, yes, I accept, I'm just checking messages right now, then I will accept that I'm not going to be paid for that. And so that's one thing that you can do in terms of the grace period. You can change that to a number of minutes. There's a few good examples of how to run these commands and different scenarios of how you might use them. Maybe increasing the grace period or changing the shift notice message for yourself. But yeah, I think one thing that I've got as a question for this is more about, does this include checking shifts to see what hours you're going to be working? Now, maybe if you're an organized person, you might get to the end of your shift or close to the end of your shift and go, right, okay, so I'm almost finished. When am I expected to work next? And has that changed? Now, I'd be keen to know if this ability to prevent people from accessing outside of their shift hours, does that prevent them from also seeing when the shift hours are? Hopefully that's not the case. Maybe I need to read into it a bit closer, but maybe there's a part in the app there where you can still go in, you can see, well, these are your shift hours at a minimum. Surely you can do that, and that's just part of knowing when you're going to work next? And do people actually expect to be paid for checking a schedule? I don't know. But hopefully that will be available. The rollout for that begins late October and expected to be completed mid-November. So rolling out now, be interesting to have a look at. Now, that's all I've got for the list. There was a couple of other ones that I'll just buzz over really quickly. SharePoint Spaces apparently going generally available. Now, what does that mean? It's a big message, but basically it looks like they're just removing the preview tag from wherever it's mentioned. So you can create a new space in a team, rather in a SharePoint site. It's going out of preview and now you won't have the preview tag. What else was there? There was something else about that. No, I think there it was something around if you wanted to disable this as a ability, then you know, go into the additional notes here if that's something that you want to turn off, but it's going to be on by default as it comes out of preview. Last one, just to quickly take a look at, because I'm always looking at streaming technology and seeing how this is performing, how well it works. There's a change here for the NDI technology in Microsoft Teams on individual meeting basis. That's MC225011. And it looks like, well, how it currently works today, you need to be assigned the permission to be able to use NDI. I found that when I swap in and out of different tenants, I've got to go back in and turn that permission on. Or like if I've logged out of Teams back in again. And once that's turned on, that means that if I start a meeting and then I've got a coding tool, something like OBS to live stream and to code things, and it works with NDI, then Teams knows, oh, you've got something here that's able to receive the NDI stream, the video and the audio from different people that are within the meeting. So it'll warn the people with a bar across the top saying there is, you know, you're possibly being streamed. And I like that. It's nice and ethical. And then, you know, we take that, we put it into a scene. You've seen me play around with this before if you've followed some of our content. But yeah, what's changing here is that you can assign that permission, it would seem, on an individual basis. That means that over and above having that permission to do that, I could be the organizer of the meeting and I might get John Moore to come in and produce the meeting for me. So I could get him to, well, I could allow him that permission and then he could run using NDI. And it wouldn't be just me then, it would be him that could produce the meeting. So interesting permission there. Maybe take a closer look at that if you're interested in NDI. And that